Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Games About Glory podcast. I'm your host, THFC Steph, and because there wasn't a Saturday or Sunday game for us, we've decided to grasp the opportunity not to analyse a match and instead to dip deep into our memory banks and bring you our favourite ever Spurs sides. By the way, thanks for the overwhelming feedback we've been getting, and just to let you know, we are now available on all podcast platforms, so please subscribe. Before we go to our favourite ever Spurs sides, let's meet the team, your regulars, who will be discussing these great players. We have Orson Dawson. How are you?
Good, Steph. Good morning from Melbourne.
Quick question for you. Sausages or samosas?
Sausages if they're pork.
And that ended on a question somehow, so I'm gonna just continue. Yeah,
are they pork, Steph?
For more.
Are
I was waiting for more to that. Well, we can get it. They can be pork sausages, Moby. And why don't you tell us? Hello, Moby. How are you? Why don't you tell us? Sausages or samosas? And yes, they can be pork.
I don't want them to be pork, mate. I'm vegetarian. So I need to check if they're pork, because if they are, I've got to put them back. So I would be sausages pretty much on a daily basis, but I would like to dip into a cheeky little vegetable samosa at the weekend. Does that help?
Well, it was a rather more involved answer than I expected this question to yield. That I will say. Luton, bring us back to some sanity. Hello, how are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you. And it's good to be back on the podcast. Pork sausages, no, for cultural, religious reasons. And vegan sausages are a crime against humanity. They shouldn't exist. And I'm from a family who make the best samosas known to man. And there's going to be a point where I share them with the boys on this pod. So samosas all the way for me.
Comprehensive. This is really one of the more detailed side questions we've had. So, Ricky, how are you?
And all right, mate. Yeah.
And I think you know what I'm going to ask you.
Well, sausage for me, mate. Sausage sandwich, can't resist it. Sausage mash, just as good. Sorry about all the samosa fans out there, but
Milo, next. You have the Milo. You could be this could be a critical moment in
tiebreaker.
Votes? Yeah. Well, I love a sausage, but Luton's promised to bring us along some samosas when we go to the lane when all of this is over, and that swings it for me because I want to get back to normal, and I want to get back to normal with a game of football and some of Mrs. Luton's samosas that I've heard so much about. So that's my vote.
Are you going to bring them in Tupperware or just loose in a backpack?
No, they're going to be... I don't get away with backpacks, me, but...
What samosas are you bringing?
Not on the tube, no.
I'm going to bring it in.
Don't run.
I'm going to bring it in one of those warm, keep warm sort of Tupperware things. It'll be nice and fresh.
Oh, dearie me. Well, I'm just going to say, having stood in my kitchen 2 weeks ago and sang, oh, chicken samosa, in the a tribute to the great Moussa Sissoko, I'm all in for the samosas. I think
it's a comprehensive win for the samosa. Yeah,
it is.
Is that the pot done then?
Although I must admit, the way that Milo said, I do enjoy a sausage, was rather cheeky.
And it was a little
I
bit
actually
carry on,
had
wasn't
to
it?
Suppress. I had to suppress a burst of laughter at the way in which he delivered that. So I'm not entirely convinced Milo's 100% in on the samosas. I think there might be some politeness going on here for Luton. Any man who fancies a bit of a sausage like that should be taken seriously.
Enough
of this nonsense. Thank you. What I'm interested to know is whether we could actually, as a side thought, just an ambient thought as we're going through the teams. And incidentally, for the listeners, what we're doing is we're picking a season in our club's glorious history, and we are relating our own personal joys, loves, memories to that season and that team. But Milo, why don't you kick us off? Why don't you start things? Which season are we at? Bring us through your memories of it.
So I've gone with 2005-2006. I know this isn't going to be probably the best side that we're talking about tonight. But the reason I'm going for this is that it's Martin Yole's first full season in charge. And Martin Yole made going to the lane fun again. And I think he also helped turn us around. We were shit for a long time before Yole. I'll talk through our lineup. So we've got Robbo in goal, Saltieri, Ledley, Dawson and Lee in the back. Midfields, Lennon, Carrick, Genus, Davids. And then up front, we've got Mido and Keane. Although Defoe played a few less games than those two, but was playing a lot as well. I think what's remarkable, so I was looking at the transfers when I was researching this, and So the business we did that summer, players coming in, we've got Tom Hodgson coming in, Stoutieri, Lennon, Tainio, Routledge, Davids, Lee, Genus, Garlic, and Murphy, which was a solid bit of business. And then going out, we had Canute going out, Edmund going out, Sean Davis, Michael Brown, a couple of other players coming out on loan. So yeah, and all of that for a net spend of $2.5 million.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And so in terms of the season itself, it was at that point, it was our highest ever Premier League finish. We finished fifth. You know, if you look at the seasons before that, so Premier League history before that, we've got 8th, 15th, 7th, 8th, 10th, 14th, 11th, 10th, 12th, 9th, 10th, 14th, 9th. That's my adult life supporting Spurs. And Martin Yeo, it's the first time in all of my adult life supporting Spurs that I went to the lane expecting us to win, or at least put up a game. So he's got my eternal love.
And mine.
It's fascinating as well in your selection. I mean, you've gone for Mido and Keane. You've obviously gone for little and large there, but I mean, Jermaine was absolute mustard at that time, wasn't he? I'm interested in your selection there.
So it wasn't so much my selection, it's the team that played the most. You haven't really picked who I would play, it was who you all picked most weeks.
Was that David's first season with us?
It was, yeah. So,
I mean, I think it goes without saying that he was a pivotal transfer for our club.
He was.
He just brought about not just the winning mentality, but he was like literally like a dog after a bone in midfield, wasn't he? He would just never stop.
Beast.
That's right. So on my notes for kind of memories of the season, the first on the list is David's debut. His first touch in English football, kicking Ray Parlour up in the air.
It's terrific stuff. Poetry.
Yeah, if that's all he ever did in a Spurs shirt, I'd love him.
I wanted to do that every week, even to this day, just like when Parler's on TalkSport or something, just knock on the door and David just walks in and kicks him up the arse and walks out again. Yeah, it'd be brilliant and well deserved.
It was funny, wasn't it? There was kind of half that season, everyone just gave him more space because they were scared of him. It was a bit like you used to get with Roy Keane. People gave him too much respect.
He was the first player I remember coming to the club, probably since Klinsmann, actually, that really gave us a reprofile in international football. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah.
He was a big signing after a long time. I remember I started to fall out of love with football until Joel came back. And this is where it started for me again. So, yeah. And David was such a draw because, you know, he was a European winner and he came in and he gave the fans a bit of a boost. He gave the team a bit of a boost and you could see it in the team. And Yol played open, free-flowing football, but he was at the heart of it. It was a great season, actually, now thinking back on it.
And if I remember...
David's got banged out, didn't he, by Keane? Wasn't it Jamie O'Hara was telling the story on the radio the other week about how there was a bit of a ding-dong going on and Keane was a boxer. So when Davids was giving it the big one in the first season, Robbie Keane just sparked him out.
Wow. Did he?
And then apparently walked in the next day. Morning, Robbie. No problem. Fine as anything. But yeah, and I was surprised by that because you'd have thought Davids would have been the absolute hard man that he obviously thought he was. But yeah, Keane was the boy. He was having none of it.
Milo, quick question. If I remember that, was this not the season where we went up to, I think it had just turned to the Riverside. I don't want to call it Ayerson Park. Yeah. We went up to Middlesbrough last game of the season and we needed the win and we just couldn't get it. It was a 1-0 defeat, as I remember.
Last game of the season this year, Steph, you're going to remember.
Talked about it last week.
At least the catering you'll remember.
Oh, go on. Was this
fancy Italian
05-06?
Yeah.
This was the season. Yeah. So Middlesbrough was the season before. I'm getting my years confused. So Middlesbrough was the season before. Of course, because this was Michael Carrick's. That's right. And they were all vomiting on the pitch. And yeah. I was complaining about this 2 weeks ago. I mean, I remember the game. The game is seared into my conscience. Where I get confused with these Martin Yol lineups is I always think the Pedro Mendes goal at Old Trafford happened in the same season. Yes.
No, that was the season before. So okay. Mendes left. He went in that job lot to Portsmouth.
Okay.
So I was looking back on videos on this and sort of interviewing Yol talking about the West Ham game. And, you know, he's saying there that 10 of the first team were out sick and we'd asked to delay the game for 24 hours and we got refused. We asked to delay it for 3 or 4 hours, got it refused.
Well, I remember Michael Carrick was throwing up on the pitch. I mean, you remember that? Yeah. I mean, there were several players actually were throwing up on the pitch. I remember that. We held our own in that game for a long time. And it was only right near the end that we got done, if I remember correctly.
I was going to say, can I move us on to a happier memory of this season?
Please do. Yes.
Yes, so, please.
So 1-1 draw at Arsenal at their place. Yol and Wenger going eyeball to eyeball.
Legendary. Beautiful.
I can read the quote because it was Wenger was complaining about Keane not knocking the ball out when Aboué and Silva were injured in the build-up to Keane's goal. And first of all, Yol said, "I don't know, I didn't see the incident," which I thought was perfect, considering. But the other bit was, everybody saw what happened, and I think I did well to hold myself back. I really don't think he knows how strong I am. Otherwise, he wouldn't approach me with the headbutts and everything. Irrespective of what is right and wrong, I don't think managers should be acting like this. I've not had a drink with Wenger. I don't know if I will. I hate it when I'm right and I offer somebody a handshake and they walk away. That's very difficult to take. Oh, I love the man. I love the man.
It was so classic. I love the way they went, as you say, they went face to face. And that side on profile, Martin Yell always reminds me of Muttley. Do you know in the Wacky Races? He's got that big cut. He's just going to like munch Wenger and just like discard him, basically. It was so funny. But,
and it was all the Tony Soprano stuff we had with him at the time.
Yeah,
as well.
And that as well. Milo,
if you, why not round us off with this okay. selection, and then we're going to move on to the next.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got two other observations on this. So we talked about the kind of the fun element of it. My abiding memory of this is the run into that season every week on the Park Lane singing "We're All Going on a European Tour." And it was just really good fun. And then the other thing that kind of, maybe I'm just getting old, it feels quite, it doesn't feel that long ago to me. But then you look at the lineup and we're playing a pretty straight 4-4-2. This is Mourinho's second season at Chelsea. And I don't want to get us into a Mourinho chat because we've done that quite a bit, but it really kind of, the difference in the football and over the period of time really jumped out to me. The other thing is that the Glazers bought United this year. So it's quite a pivotal point. And then just to end on a high point, Arsenal lost the Champions League final to Barcelona. So it was a good year.
Woo-hoo. Hey.
And on that fine high note, a note that we all remember clearly, I know, and I certainly do, what joy. Ricky.
Yo.
1986, 1987.
Yeah, going back some there.
Sexy chevrons and all that. Come on,
it
my
was.
Friend.
Look, look. Us, yeah, I've got them.
Bring us through it. Fire away. Shirts.
Where shall I start with this? I think team-wise, I can conclude that we had massive treble hopes this year. And in Tottenham True style, we had treble disappointment basically by the end. So we're kind of quite used to that. But personally, the reason I picked this year was the first year I went to White Hart Lane and the first year I went regularly. And before that, a friend, I was probably 14 and a half, something like that, when I first went to White Hart Lane in the season. Previously, I went with a school friend. We used to go, because I lived in kind of Surrey, Greater London, sort of southern suburbs, that kind of thing. And a friend of mine, we used to go, do you remember Charlton Shed with Palace? And we used to go to Selhurst Park a lot. But I've been a Tottenham fan since I was about 7. And my dad was never going to take me. He was kind of an armchair fan, slightly favoured Liverpool and that kind of thing. He wasn't really that interested to troopsing up to North London. But of course I was. And the urge when you support Tottenham and you listen, I mean, back then you're listening on the radio at night for evening games. There's not much on telly, that kind of stuff. So, that's the only access you have really. But the urge to go to Tottenham becomes kind of irresistible. But then the urge to ask mum and dad whether I can go is basically, you know, they're going to say, no way, Jose. So what does a 14-year-old do?
Should that be Jose?
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was going to say that's the only legitimate use of Jose we've had on the pod so far. So what does any 14-year-old do? They don't ask their mum and dad. They just go, don't they? They just, you know, like, I'm not really that fussed what they're thinking. I'm thinking I need to follow my dream here. So off I go. And I'd kind of, the first game I ever went to was Scunthorpe at home in the FA Cup. And of course, we went to the final that year. So that was January the 10th. And I kind of, dreary day. I remember going there. I think and like you do when you first ever go to a football stadium, I was in the East Stand. You kind of wander around thinking, where can I go? Where can I go? And I think I was on the East Lower Terrace. And then I noticed the people up a bit higher, a bit noisier up there. Obviously, that's the old shelf and that kind of thing. And the one vivid memory I have from that game is Chrissy Waddle scoring an absolute belter towards the end. Scunthorpe, we won 3-2, but it wasn't as close as that. But luckily, Scunthorpe gave us a bit of a game. But in the end, we sort of surpassed that. But what else do I remember for that season? David Pleat was our manager. I could do some transfers for that year. So he was coming in. I think Pleat was our manager. He brought Mitchell Thomas from Luton. He'd brought Nico Clausen from Belgium, who was scored goals in Belgium. And we also bought Richard Gough, who was a bit of a game changer, basically. I'm not kidding you. We could do with someone like him right now. He was an all-round, immense defender, really, really sensible. Knew what he was doing, marshalled that defence. He was our club captain as well at that stage. And then in December, Steve Hodge came in and Robbo went. Robbo, Graham Roberts, went to Rangers. But memorable points in that game from that season was obviously the FA Cup run going all the way to Wembley, but then unfortunately being mass favourites against Coventry and losing. But Pleaty really had organised the team there. And with how much kind of formations and stuff are so much talked about then, loads of teams would be playing 4-4-2. And we played slightly different, which was basically a 4-5-1. But the system was just worked massively. It clicked. And of course, we had Clive Allen just banging in goals for fun. He scored 49 goals in total that year. And I remember going and just, you could just tell the confidence he had that season. And in fact, that run through the team, it was, I mean, I think, go back to what Milo said, that was obviously that was my first year, but I realised later on in that year, I expected to go to home games and you just knew you were going to win. And of course, I then had all the years after that where none of that ever happened at all.
Is there a player that you can compare Clive Allen to in the Premier League at the moment? Like, what kind of striker was he? Like, I'm struggling to remember those goals. I know he was a poacher. Did he score any from outside the box? Was he
Not really. I don't know. He was a kind of all-round striker, but definitely not in a Harry Kane mold. But I'm just trying to think who else he might be. Danny Ings is maybe a bit cuter than him. Maybe I'm not sure.
I think Danny Ings is actually a really good shout, because I wonder if Danny Ings with Waddle, Ozzie and Hoddle behind him would start to achieve numbers. I mean, that's a question I've always had about this season with Clive Allen. It was a brilliant, brilliant goal haul. And Clive, if you're listening, what I'm about to say is not to denigrate that in any way, but what a supply line. Oh my word.
Yeah.
How many chances? I'd love to know what the chance creation per game is.
Milo, I've heard Waddle say about that.
Yeah. But yeah.
I mean, if I go through
Waddle
the light,
takes the piss about how many he actually should have scored. I reckon if he had been halfway decent, he'd have scored 100, the amount of chances that Hoddle and Waddle made for him.
I mean, if I go through the lineup, and the lineup I chose is the one we ended up in the cup final, but it really had settled down by then. We had Raymond in goal. And then it was Thomas and Chris Hughton at fullback. And then we had Gough and Mabba, who were just a magic pairing in the middle. And then the midfield was Paul Allen, Waddle, Hoddle, Ardiles, and Steve Hodge, and then Clive Allen up front. And of course, these days we moan about Højbjerg and who's going to support him and stuff like that. And really, we had like Waddle, Hoddle, and Ardiles, like in the kind of middle. But it worked. It was magnificent. And Paul Allen, I loved Paul Allen. He was an industrious player, knew what he was doing and that kind of thing. Same with Steve Hodge, really.
And are we saying that's coolest kit? Is that the best first shirt?
That's the one I
think
was
it could be
to.
The Hummel one, yeah. But of course, there was the kind of cup final debacle where we wore the new kit, and then never happened these days. Some had sponsors and some didn't. Yeah. And it was like a bit of a disaster. Do you remember that?
Let me correct you all. It's not the coolest kit. It's the sexiest one in one sense, but it's sort of like a techno gig and everything compared to the classic Lecoq Sportif 1980, 81, 82 home shirt, which will forever be the greatest shirt this club has ever worn and designed. Carry on. We've piled in and gone all shirt mental on you. So come back to us with some more thoughts on.
Well, so we were pushing on all three fronts, and we had the FA Cup run going, we had the League Cup run going. That we had a massive kind of. We beat West Ham in the quarterfinals. I always remember that one. We drew, and then we beat them 5-0 at the Lane. I remember listening to that one on the radio, and it just all kind of went right. One of those classic nights of listening to the radio. We'd probably Alan Green even then, maybe. And then we had the head-to-head with Neighbours down the road. And I do remember going to these games, and we beat them at Highbury 1-0, Clive Allen. And then at home in the second leg, we were 1-0 up. And I think the classic thing is we even played Aussies going to Wembley on the Tannoy at half-time. And in classic Tottenham fashion... Arsenal managed to score twice right towards the end of the game that basically took it to a replay. And I do remember, I think they had they tossed a coin or something after the game to say whether it was going to be at Highbury or Tottenham, the replay. And we won. And once again, we brought them back. We brought them to our place, went 1-0 up, looked like we was going to win. And then once again, I think that might have went to extra time. And they turned us over in extra time. So that was the League Cup dream snuffed out. So
all because of some moron who decided to go early with Ozzie.
Well, I think it was. And I think the story goes that they didn't even then, once that got heard in the Arsenal team in the dressing room, they didn't even bother with the team talk. They just said, look, have a listen to that. And then that was that, basically. So, and then our FA Cup run was Well, that was pretty. I remember. Does everyone remember Wimbledon? Went to Wimbledon. They tried to like ruffle us up, and then waddle and hoddle themselves, diamond lights and everything. Scored right towards the end. Do you remember that? Hoddle had a brilliant free kick, top corner.
Waddle squeezed one in from like just a ridiculous angle.
It
was
a really
wasn't
tight
it?
Angle. Yeah. He just got it in between the near post.
Thought it was side netting, and then they started celebrating. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Amazing.
And
goal.
Then the semi-final was the, do you remember, I think Villa had a keeper crisis and then they had to get some kind of part-time wine bar manager to play in goal.
That was Watford, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was Watford. It was at Villa Park. Sorry, yeah, it was at Villa Park. I'm getting confused. Yeah,
Gary Plumley, something like
that's
that.
That's the man. That's the man. Oh, and you always think that, oh, I bet it still won't go away, but it did. We just cruised that 4-1. That was kind of easy. And then it took us on to the classic FA Cup final with Coventry, full of confidence. We were a great team. Rubber stamped that within 2 minutes. Clive Allen, bang, 1-0 up. And then plucky old Coventry started coming back. Diving header. I think Bennett scored, then Houchin, then Mabbott scored for us, and then unfortunately scored in the other end, and that dream was busted, basically. But, so it wasn't... We ended up with nothing, because I think if you look at as well at the fixtures then in April, they were so packed. I mean, we think we're moaning this year. They were so packed together that we were playing every other day, basically. We had a game every other day. The fixtures became so bad. But I'll just pick two moments out from that season before I finish, and one is... And Steph... And maybe Milo will remember this name. Nasty old friend, Gabby Maguire. Do you remember him? Well, that ended Danny Thomas's career with one horrible tackle, which was tragic, really, because Danny Thomas looked a bit of a player, to be honest. He's kind of another player we could do with now, to be honest. And the other thing is, which I suppose, because we lost all those other things, my kind of pick-out moment of this season was, and I did slightly misremember this, only because I thought it was the last game at White Hart Lane, but it wasn't. Is Hoddle's goal against Oxford, as we all remember that. It's all about, and that is worthy of the king of White Hart Lane, that was. Yeah. Just the way he ghosted through, halfway line, went through, put the keeper on his arse, and it was just arms in the air thinking, yes, I'm the best player that's ever played here. And but I thought that was the last home game of the season, but I looked, but we played Man United at home after that, and Hoddle played in that. So I did slightly misremember that, but not that it matters. It was a legendary moment, really, for Hoddle. So that was kind of great. And I would just say as well that I was really glad that I managed to go in that season and I had the next season as well before the old shelf disappeared, because I had a whole year and a half to experience the shelf as it was before they nicely filled it in with executive boxes. But and that was a brilliant experience. Once you kind of integrate and you realise that's where you need to be, you'd have to arrive at games at 1 o'clock, half one, be able to get a spot up there. And you would travel some mileage in the game as well with various surges, trying to avoid the kind of being the first one in line for the barrier as it all kind of like gyrates round. And I think I've been to some games and I suppose I'm a lot younger then, and it's hard to see some of the game. You know, you'd watch the first half and think, well, how much of that did I see? Because you're basically like kind of fighting for your life. I know that sounds ridiculous. You're meant to go to football to watch it, but that's the truth. That's what it was like. So I'm really grateful that I managed to disobey my parents and troops up there every other week whenever I could to watch it. Yeah.
But that's basic. Well, from Naughty Ricky and the Mighty Shelf, we're going to move on to Awesome. In 2010, 2011, when the shelf was long gone, but there were some brilliant midfield talents still on display in the Mighty Shirt, as there always has been. But Awesome, the floor is yours. Bring us forward in time.
Forward 13 time. Years. But forward 13 still, years yeah. into the custodianship of Harry Redknapp, who, you know, he's not my favourite ever Spurs manager, but I think this was my favourite ever season of supporting the club. And it's a strange choice because we finished fifth. You know, we didn't have the goal scorer like Allen or Kane. We had, you know, Van der Vaart was our leading goal scorer on 15 goals. And in a lot of ways, it was an improvement on many of the, you know, the darker years of the late 80s and 90s. But it, you know, we didn't qualify for the Champions League. But most importantly, we were in the Champions League. And we were in the Champions League for the first time in, you know, it felt like forever because, you know, the rebranded European Cup. I'd always been into watching Champions League games, even if Tottenham weren't in them, wherever I was. If it, you know, the Liverpool Istanbul game is burnt in my memory. I watched it with a Liverpool supporter. And I was always jealous of, you know, clubs being in the Champions League, and the fact that we were there and we were in a difficult group, it just, for me, added the real glory to that season. But First of all, I'll talk you through my 11. Got Gomez in goal, the octopus, amazing on his day, calamity on others. But I think generally he was a good keeper. You know, we signed him. I think we signed him on the basis of he had an amazing game against us in the Europa. He made a blinding save in that game, and he also made blinding saves for us. And then we got back four of Charlie Chalker, Chaluka, my namesake, Mr. Dawson, Ledley, and Disco Benny at left back. Although I'll give a nod to Danny Rose, who did make a few appearances back then. And then we got a midfield of Lennon, who was remarkably consistent that season. Sandro, who I'll talk about a little bit more about in a minute. Modric, say no more. And on the left, Gareth Bale. I mean, what a midfield that was. I couldn't fit in the guy who I've got on the back of this shirt, Rafa. I put him up front because I think Harry did sometimes pick him up there in the little and large combo at Defoe's expense alongside the beanpole of Mr. Crouch. But that lineup of, you could say it was a 4-5-1 or 4-4-2. I mean, Van der Vaart didn't do a lot of defending. That is what I'm going to say was our starting 11. But there were good players on the bench. Huddleston, Gallas, Defoe. I gave Cudicini the backups keeper spot. He did play a few games, and I chucked Pavlyuchenko in there just because he scored some absolute belters that season. And yeah, it was a great team. And to go into, I noticed you guys went through the transfers, and when I did my homework, I did look at who came in. And yeah, Van der Vaart came in at the 11th hour from Real Madrid, 8 million. Sandro came in from the Copa Libertadores Champions Internacional, 8 million. Modric signed a 6-year contract extension, unheard of in these days. Gallas, we got on a free from the scum. And even Ledley signed a 2-year extension, which was, you know, would have been nice to read, even if he didn't play many games. But that's a solid window and not a huge expense. So well done again to Levy for that. And yeah, as I say, going into the season, for me, it was all about the Champions League. We had some good results in the league. I was just looking through them there. Like, you know, we beat Liverpool away. We won 3-2 at Arsenal away, first time in 17 years. So this team on its day could really turn it on and do it against the best, which I suppose was never more emphasised than the intergames in the group of the Champions League. You know, I'll remind you of the first one, which was we went, you know, 4-0 down at half time against Inter. And then a certain young big-eared signing from Southampton / Cardiff kind of announced himself on the world stage with 3 great individual goals. And we were also a man down.
Do you remember Taxi from Icon? What a chance
that was. Well, that was the return leg, really.
Yeah, yeah.
This was peak Spurs Bale, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
It was very early peak. I think that the following season, he probably did more damage in terms of Premier League output. But yeah, I mean, he well and truly announced himself. The Stoke goal was this season, you know, the one where he kind of sliced across it into the top corner. He did some damage, but I think the next season was the one where he was just kind of carrying us. But yeah, look, you mentioned the Taxi from Icon. I mean, that was probably the seminal moment of the season. I mean, that Inter home game, the 3-1 win was just, you know, for me watching it here at probably 4:45 in the morning kickoff, it made me so proud, that performance, Van der Vaart's celebration. It will be known as the Bale game, but yeah, it was Van der Vaart, Crouch and Pav that got the goals. I mean, with the Crouch one, Bale's assist was just world class.
Beautiful. You can't. It's the memory of that game will never leave me, because just the way he went down. I mean, even the first goal for Van der Vaart, I think it was an assist from Modric, wasn't it? And it was just an unbelievable pass into him.
Yeah. And he knew how to celebrate a goal, didn't he, Van der Vaart? He went apeshit. And I don't know if any of you were lucky enough to be at that one, but that would have just been an absolute belter to have been at. And the singing of the Taxi from Icon, and, you know, we're talking about a quality Brazilian right-back who basically just got humiliated by Bale that game. And then it often gets underplayed, but then we went to AC Milan in the knockout stage and beat them 1-0 with a Sandro masterclass and a Crouch goal. You know, that's not a Harry scoreline, 1-0 away from home, but we did it. And then we came home and drew 0-0. And then we're in the quarterfinal against Real Madrid. I mean, it's like, holy shit, how are we going to do this? And then 14 minutes into that game against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu, and Crouch, he's kind of cost us the game by going in for 2 stupid bits of we'll call it pressing, but it, you know, he wasn't up to the job, and two yellow cards, and Ramos was involved, so maybe one of them was, you know, debatable.
I was going to ask you about that particular moment, because I felt, look, I felt both were, well, one out of two, maybe a yellow card. But again, this continues our history of having what I consider to be awful decisions in Europe, really terrible decisions against us. And it was so harsh, utterly.
It was.
Especially considering it was Pete, it was a striker's challenge, the second one. But let me ask you this. When you look back on that season, if Peter Crouch stays on that pitch, do you think we get through to the semi-final?
I think we certainly could have done. That team was, that team for me was our Galactico team. It was, you know, I won't go through it again, but that bloody midfield of Modric, Bale, Sandro, Lennon. Lennon back then was one of the quickest players in Europe. And we had good central defence as well. I know King wasn't there for every game, but that midfield was as good as we've had.
Dallas had a decent season that year.
Great signing. Professional player, like, you know, didn't care who he played for, literally.
Yeah,
just did a very good job.
Reflecting on, and I'd asked Milo this as well already, and I thought it was very interesting regarding Jermaine Defoe. This is the second Jermaine Defoe era Spurs side that's come up where he has not been in the starting 11, yet he is he's one of our top goal scorers of all time. What do you remember about his role in this team this season? I mean, we mentioned the AC Milan game. I seem to remember he was, I can't remember if he was involved in that move or not. I remember Aaron Lennon's ball to Peter Crouch. But, I mean, he was scoring goals, surely. So walk us through, I mean, how much was he involved in this season? It seems like he must have been an awful lot.
He got four or five goals, I think.
I'm going to have a look. I think, you know, Harry and tactics, wasn't his strong point. Apparently his tactics back in those days was basically to give the ball to Modric. But I was trying to shoehorn Van der Vaart, and rightly so, into that team. And, you know, Van der Vaart's, I don't know if he's like Ndombele in the sense that he probably wasn't always good for 90 minutes, but Defoe's a hell of a sub. And yeah, Defoe obviously scored a hell of a lot of numbers of goals for us. He would have played plenty of minutes that season, but I couldn't find a way of getting him into that starting lineup. I mean, Sandro was doing a lot of work in that midfield as it was.
Yeah, no, understood. No, it's an interesting question. If I can ask you one more, the enigma that was Tom Huddleston. Talk a little bit about
greatest
Tom Huddleston.
The greatest striker of a football, I think, since Hoddle we've had. When he connected with the ball, it was a thing of beauty. One thing I'll say about Huddleston that season, and I suppose it's a fact that we've not been a lucky club with injuries, but that season we had Ledley out from October until May. We had Woodgate out for 3 months. Huddleston was out for 5 months. Bentley, 2 months. Defoe, 2 months. You know, we had some injuries to key defenders there, particularly Ledley and Woodgate, because together they were probably about as good as we've had in a very, very long time. But yeah, Huddleston was... That's my memory of him, a beautiful passer. He made the game look easy. And when he did score, it wasn't that often. It was often a thing of well-timed beauty.
So a wrap-up, if we can, on this season from you before we move on.
Just to say, it gave us, as a club, a taste for the Champions League, which, you know, maybe even culminated in last season, in whenever it was, in Madrid. And I'm very grateful for that from Harry and that team. It was a proud time to be a Tottenham fan.
We're going to get in our TARDIS now, and we're going to go back to 1990-91, and Moby is going to tell us what was going on in that fine season.
I can barely remember about yesterday, so going back that far has certainly been a real challenge for me mentally. I was lucky. I was originally going to go for 87 for all the reasons Ricky said, but I didn't realise Ricky had called Bagsy on that, on the team call that I dropped off early last week. So I then said, can I go for 1901? I thought I'd go for the original FA Cup winning year ends in one team, but Milo quite rightly pulled a rank on me there and said, no, that's a bloody silly idea, you fool, don't do that. So we suddenly, eventually, I think, as often happens, we came to the right decision at 91, which, you know, for me, it was the end of the 80s, which had been a great decade, a couple of FA Cups, the UEFA Cup, obviously, you know, the latter bits that Ricky spoke about as well. We'd gone through a bit of transition, Hoddle, Crooks, Archibald, Birkinshaw had all left, but we seemed to be building out this great new side. You know, I remember the optimism going into the season. All of a sudden, we had Gazza, Waddle, Lineker, Eltel, Terry Venables in charge, having left Barcelona a couple of seasons before to come to us. Personally, I was 17. I was learning to drive. I was at sixth form. I'd found an offie that would serve underage kids alcohol. You know, life was really good. You know, and on the bigger scene, we were coming off the back of World Cup Italia as well. You know, Ness and Dorma, Gazza and Lineker had absolute blinders. And then now I was sat in the East Midlands supporting mighty Tottenham with, you know, these two world stars now coming back to play for us. And in fairness, they ripped it up. So it really felt like, you know, it was the start of a fantastic team. We were building. We were going to carry on collecting trophies all through the 90s. And, you know, the end of the season that I've picked, obviously it culminated, you know, an FA Cup final in front of 80,000 fans at the old Wembley Stadium, which we all know is proper Wembley, not that shit show that's there now. Obviously, in typical Tottenham style, though, what we didn't know as fans was behind the scenes, an absolute car crash was building up. There was an early hint. Obviously, we couldn't turn down Marseille's offer for Chris Waddle. It was just too irresistible. We thought that was Waddle's fault at the time, wanting to go abroad. But you hear Chrissy talking now, and he literally just did not want to go. He was in tears going to the airport, and Marseille just kept upping and upping their bid. So Chrissy became, I think he was the world's third most expensive player at the time, £4.5 million. Sit behind some Argentinian guy who played a friendly for us once, Diego somebody. But anyway, I've not heard of him. So back on the pitch, it was definitely prototype Spursy, even back in the day. Really inconsistent season in the league, you know, which was par for the course back then. But we finished 10th, having finished third the season before. So that was really disappointing. If I look down, remind myself of the highs. And of course, you know, one of the things for me looking back was the old VHS video that I had back then, you know, of the, you know, the end of season glory. So back on VHS tape. And, you know, we had Gazza's ridiculously good free kick against Derby, watching Peter Shilton sprawl for corners like the old man he was at the time. Paul Walsh stepping in, banging a hat-trick against Sheffield United. And a little bit of a man hero for me, David Howes at the time, doing his one-man team impersonation, scoring a double away at Forest, kicking one off the line when Forest were going to go ahead and then running the length of the pitch to score the winner. So what a hero, as the commentary said at the time. But we quickly shat our pants, got beaten 5-1 away at Wimbledon. So the classic Spurs fragile underbelly hadn't gone away. And it was quite clear as the season went on, we were focusing on the Cups. League Cup, Stuart, Gazza, Lineker bashed a load of goals in against non-league fodder, but we went out to bloody Chelsea in the FA Cup replay, which was, the fifth round replay, sorry. But in the FA Cup, the magic was building. Gazza was playing on one leg, 80% injured most of the time, but the guy was on a one-man mission to win the cup for Tottenham. We got through the banana skin of a gale-force windy game away at Blackpool, which I think was the ITV game in the afternoon, which was sort of the only time I could actually get to see TV. Ex-Tangerine Paul Stewart scoring a scrappy goal in the 1-0 winner, which was great. And he was just, interestingly, he'd been bought as a striker a few seasons before by Tell, I think, just when Tell came in. But didn't really score for Toffee. And then these were the games where he was starting to settle into a deeper role back in midfield, which obviously he later came to excel in. Fourth round, Gazza just scored a couple of stormers as we blew Oxford away 4-2. And I know we'll talk about this game in a bit because that's got some special resonance, I think, for the guys on the call. Portsmouth, again, an injured Gazza on one leg, scored two solo goals to get us through 2-1. Again, carrying an injury, he saved the day for us against lower league Notts County. I think it was Tommy Johnson gave them the lead. They deserved to win on the day. And Gazza came on and, yeah, got us through again, and Naeem scoring. And this is where it starts to get interesting now. This set us up for the first FA Cup semi-final ever played at Wembley. Woolwich were going for the league and cup double, and in fairness, begrudgingly, but the best team in the country. And we simply blew them away on the day. And to be honest, it felt like we'd won the final then already. It was weird there was a final to come. All I remember about the day, I might have been drinking, was Lineker scored a couple of stunners and Gazza tapped in a little free kick, which became a little bit famous later. So I don't need to dwell on that. So all this was going on. And, of course, the year ended in one. So cue Chaz and Dave with another Rockney banger, which I'm hoping Ricky will have performed for us on his guitar at the end to sing us out. Of course, the final threatened to go with full Spursy. Is that no, Ricky? Massively talented.
I've got another song from that year.
Oh, excellent. Okay. I'll hold you to that in a minute, mate. Yeah, so we came up against really talented Forest side. We had been trading blows with them for a few years. They had, unlike us, been picking up League Cup finals. But the FA Cup was eluding Brian Clough. So in a weird foreshadowing of later years, the whole country wanted the East Midlands side to turn over Tottenham, which is particularly raw for me still recently. We didn't do ourselves any favours. You may remember we decided to build on the success of swapping kits in the 87 final and again swapped kits on the day, running out in some bloody silly long spaggy 1950s shorts, and the entire country pissed themselves laughing at us. We lined up pretty much with a five-man midfield this season, which kind of caught me out a little bit when I looked at it, because I hadn't appreciated how deep Stewart was playing. But very quickly, Eric the Viking in goal. What a man. Loved him. Pat van den Hauw filling in at right back. Mabbott and the 1987 FA Cup winner Steve Sedgley, fact fiends, obviously for Coventry, was playing at centre-back. Obviously, late Justin Edinburgh, rest in peace, at left back. Davy Howells, screen in the back four. Stewart and Gazza in midfield. Paul Allen and Vinnie Samway has given us the width on the right and left, respectively. And then, obviously, poacher supreme, Gary Lineker, providing the goal threat. Early on, predictably, it all looked doomed to fail. Obviously, Gazza's legendary knee-high tackles, ending his season and his next season and potentially his career. He let Stewart Pierce smack a trademark blistering free kick in. Won't mention the fact that they cheated pushing our wall out of the way. And then we had the usual litany of Spursy disallowed goals and predictable saved penalties, seeming like they were going to put paid to our dreams. But second half, couple of changes. Was he Naeem on for Gazza? Paul Stewart finally beat Crosley, and then Des Walker, bless his soul, went full Gary Mabbott tribute act for us and smacked an extra time headed own goal winner. The cup was ours. Yay. Couple of comments just to sort of tell you how the season ended, really. So Tottenham Hotspur were now the record holding 8 times winners of the FA Cup, which was a lot back then, kids. At last, we were back into Europe after the Heysel ban, which of course wasn't Liverpool's fault. And with our dream team partnership of Venables and Sugar ousting the evil Irving Scholar at the top of the club, we were set to dominate the 90s. What could possibly go wrong?
I just want to note for our listeners that far be it that you might think we just come on here without any preparation, we do try and do some preparation. And for the entire week in our editorial thread, Moby's been messaging us saying, oh, I'm really busy. I haven't been able to keep up with this. I haven't got my homework done. I'm sorry, lads. I might be a little bit rough on this and that and the other. May I just say that was the smoothest 5-minute presentation I think I could possibly have imagined. And I personally have nothing else to ask you about this.
Did I cover it all?
That was glorious.
He missed something incredibly important. So 11-year-old Luton picked Tottenham as his football team during that semi-final. And it's one of the obviously greatest moments of my life. It was Gazza scoring that free kick against those lot from across the river. And and that's the day I began my journey to Spurs, and I think it's the most important thing that happened that season in my very, very important world.
It was great.
I'll just add something to that free kick.
You fell for it, didn't you, as well? Awesome that year.
Completely. I mean, that was the first year I ever went to a live game, the fourth round game v Oxford, the 4-2, which Gascoigne was on fire for. But the thing about that free kick in the semi-final was it was after 5 minutes. I mean, what a blow to the other team, especially when it was looking like it was a little bit too far out to actually take a shot. And he didn't just take a shot. He blasted that into Seaman's top left. It was glorious. Yeah, so incredible.
I think it was touch and go whether, because he didn't have a hernia operation just before that. And it was touch and go whether he was going to make the semi. But typical Gazza.
Notts County, he was, I think he'd had a little operation before Notts County and just loaded up on painkillers.
I'm surprised he didn't give himself
the night before.
I'm surprised he didn't injure himself celebrating that goal, because he went ballistic.
And can I also just mention something you missed on the final there, Moby, was great foresight by Steve Sedgley when he was giving Roy Keane the full wanker sign. Did you not notice that in that final?
Lovely moments. Lovely
memories. It was a lovely moment.
I have to chip in now with a quick memory on this, because I was living in the States, where I still do live, actually. And there was very, very hard to see these games live. Satanta, which was the first broadcaster to arrive in the US football scene, had not quite got its game going. And so I actually received this game, Federal Express, on a VHS tape. So I didn't see the goal until 2 days later. It came via Express. And I literally got it when I was on assignment to go and do something with Napalm Death that night. So Barney, being the absolute legend he is, despite being a Villa supporter, was like, all right, mate, why don't you come and put it on the bus? We'll watch it on the bus together. And so I actually watched that semi-final 2 days late on the Napalm Tour bus. With thanks to Barney and Shane for that glorious moment.
Steph, I still think you saw it before Seaman.
Oh, you just I just put my hand up as well. That's the gag I was going to go for. Well done, Milo.
Well, he's in. He's in. He's in. And you know
Milo's
what?
Won that.
That's too polite there.
Brilliant. What a fine place. What a fine place to move on.
So, Steph, which year are you going to go for?
I'm going to go for 1981-82. Which was the reason I've chosen this year, and I'm going to stretch it from May 1981. I'm going to cheat a little bit. Just such a glorious game to see against Man City at the cup finals, both of them. I won't dwell on those. I'll go straight into 82. I'll give you some overall facts about this season. First of all, it was a season where we went for four trophies very seriously. We seriously went for four trophies right to the bitter end. That it faded away was purely down to mathematics of games being played. I think there must have been some terrible weather that winter, which I can't quite picture. But, you know, football basically had a mid-season break. But I just want to bring us, before we get into the glorious stuff, about some statistics, actually, Milo, which you'll find quite amusing for me, not being a stat person. We hear of player managers today complaining about the amount of games played. In April of that season, 1982, we played 9 matches. Okay, in 1 month. In May, we played 10. On the 7th, the 10th, the 12th, the 14th, the 17th, the 21st, the 24th, and the 28th of May, we were playing football. I just think when you take those numbers into account with the squad sizes that were available, I just think it's just ludicrous, really. I mean, it's just insane, right? You can't. It's no surprise that we ended up with only one trophy. And that trophy we ended up with, we really hung on to the bitter end. And it was the 1982 FA Cup. And we'll get to that in a minute. But let me give you the side that I would choose. And it was pretty much the side that was for most of the season. You got Ray Clements in goal. You've got Stevie Perryman, Graham Roberts, Paul Maxie Miller and Chris Hughton. You've got a four-man midfield. I've sort of put them in a diamond formation, actually, with Ardiles, Villa, Galvin and Hoddle. And then you've got Archibald and Crooks, who were an absolutely brilliant forward partnership. And Garth Crooks is our leading scorer that season. I think he got 19 goals. It's very hard to describe to people just how electric Garth Crooks was in the box. He's taken on, sadly, rather more of a reputation of late because of his broadcasting appearances. But my word, what a player. What a finisher. One goal he scored that season against Wolves in a 6-1 win when we were just about opening the West Stand. He was an absolute bullet header. I mean, he was always in on very instinctual. In the semi-final, the FA Cup against Leicester, he took down and just hammered home a ball in the box. Just beautiful, really quick. And then Steve Archibald was so... I mean, Steve Archibald was a pest. He was tenacious. He gave nothing up. He didn't let anyone bully him, and he could score. I mean, you know, that almost a chalk and cheese partnership in many ways, but they just gelled so well. My subs bench. I'm allowing myself 5 subs, and Alexic is in simply because I don't remember us having another keeper. The biggest and most controversial selection here would be I have Villa in my starting 11, and that's romantic because Mickey Hazard actually had a breakout season for us that season and was sensational and was a part of several of my favourite goals of that season and really was instrumental in helping us keep going on all four fronts. Gary Brooke was your quintessential come off the bench and thump one. And then we've got the other controversial selection, which would be, you know, how do you not have Mark Falco in the side? And Mark Falco was much maligned, I think, for in memory. It was really not fair. Really prolific striker, much more skillful than he was ever given credit for. And he sounded his intention to be that player at the beginning of the season when he scored 2 corking goals against Villa in the Charity Shield for a 2-2 draw. So, and then Gary O'Reilly brings up the defence, you know, he was a utility defender. The defender I have left out, and this is very purposeful on my part, but who was a part of this side is Paul Price. And that's because for some strange reason, I had some bias against Paul Price. I remember at the time, I would literally howl every time he made a mistake. I'm not sure he made many mistakes. for my money, he was making one mistake too many. So he doesn't make my side, but let it be noted, he was an important part of that team for Berkenshaw. We scored some amazing goals. And one of the biggest pleasures I've had in looking back on this side is, you know, your memory romanticizes these things, especially I was 14, 15 at the time. But looking back at some of these goals, boys, you know, they were sensational. I mean, there was a goal against Nottingham Forest where Hazard's driven across, we're attacking the Paxton. He's driven across the box towards the West Stand. He turns back inside with his left, switches to play crossfield with his right to Hoddle, who lays off first time back across the same box towards the far post to Falco, who volleys into the back of the net. Beautiful, beautiful goal. And again, in the same game, a game I was at, by the way, Glenda, 30 yards out, he smacks a ball into Hazard, who chests it down and volleys on the half volley, 25 yards. Incredible, incredible. And if there's a game this season that I have to say was the quintessential, it was everything that we were that season. It was against Chelsea in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup, which you can, yeah, it's available on YouTube. I encourage you to go and check out the highlights, where I think for 14 minutes, we played the best football I've ever seen a Tottenham Hotspur side play for 14 minutes. It was sensational. We were 1-0 down and we went 3-1 up. And we had, you know, the goal that you will surely have seen on the highlights was, and I'll describe it, Houghton from the left into Archibald, Archibald to Hazard, Hazard to Glenn on the right, who hits an angle drive into the far left-hand corner on the floor. And it was all bang, 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 bang. The speed, the touch, the vision. You're talking about 1982. The balls are heavier, the pitches are shit, and the tackles are coming in at some fucking speed. This side was beautiful, you know? Another personal memory I have is beating Man United 3-1 on November 22nd, because right after that, I got the tube down to the Hammersmith and saw the mighty Judas Priest on the Point of Entry tour. So that was a personally brilliant, a brilliant day for me. And I'm gonna finish... Well, I've got two areas to finish on. We were in the Cup Winners' Cup that season. We played Barcelona in the semi-final. It is to this day why I have something against Barcelona, because the reputation they have is of tiki-taka and being a beautiful side. They were one of the filthiest teams I've ever seen play a live football match. They were appalling. And I was in the Park Lane that night. And I remember before the game, I was behind the goal and there were scarf exchanges going on with Barcelona fans behind us. By the end, I swear, it's probably not good, but people were burning scarves and there was all sorts going on because we had witnessed brutality of an extreme level. Some of the challenges going in that night, I mean, you know, there'd be players getting 6-game bans. It was appalling. Glenn Hoddle spent most of the night doing hurdles. And it was just so unfortunate that Ray Clements had probably his biggest error for us that night. But let it be noted, we were actually robbed in the second leg when Ricky Villa scored a good goal. It was disallowed. It should not have been disallowed. We were robbed, I believe. And I still am quite bitter about that. And I can't really get past Barcelona. So by the time we got to the cup final, we were really limping. And I remember being behind the goal and John Gregory hitting the bar for QPR with about 75 minutes and thinking that's got to be a sign that we're going to get what we deserve. We did not deserve to win that game that night, although we did create chances. I don't think we deserved it. I think they were better. We deserved it for our season. And final thought, I promise, this is the final thought. This was the year of the Falklands. Ozzy Ardiles went through some terrible abuse. And one of the proudest moments I have had as a Spurs supporter was when we would go to these few games around the Falklands and we would sing Argentina for him. It was really felt like us against the world. And he got absent. The culmination of this was the semi-final against Leicester at Villa Park, where he got verbally battered. I mean, really, you know, it was small-minded England in all its unglory. And I felt that we were a shining beacon of just like fairness and sticking up. Obviously, he was a Spurs player. I suppose if he'd been playing for Arsenal, we might have been booing as well. I don't know. I'd like to think that's not the case. But, you know, and so I wonder if we ever really got the same Ardiles back. I don't think so. And I think that really Ricky stuck around and was brave to stick around. But in fairness, I think it destroyed him as well. So it's bittersweet as well to think about what happened to those two wonderful players. Mm. And it's to Ozzy's eternal credit that he played a blinder in that game against Leicester. And it was, you know, it was the last game he played for us that season. So there we have it. I could go on about this season forever. It is, you know, probably my favourite season for so many reasons, nostalgia being major, but the quality of football was incredible. It really was, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. It was fantastic. And get your YouTube up and look at some highlights, because some of these goals, you just don't see them anymore. And Glenn Hoddle, I'm sorry, to all the great players we've had, he was the best. And I do actually want to give some appearance statistics, which are just the statistics are amazing. These players are playing 50, 60 times, you know, 50, 60 games they're playing. Yeah. Okay. I should stop. Someone come in and stop me, because otherwise this is going to become the 82. Hour.
Steph, okay. Can I ask you a quick one about that year, mate? Because that was just about beginning of when I started to come in, but I was probably a little bit young, and it was probably the next season, really, sort of culminating in the QPR FA Cup final that I sort of became sentient. You mentioned Mickey Hazard, which, you know, I know of him, great player, but I always sort of got the impression that he always seemed to be playing second fiddle to Glenn and only coming in when Glenn was injured. From what you saw that season, is that fair, or was there a way that we could have accommodated both of them? Because, I mean, I look at the UEFA Cup final a few years later and I think Hazard deputised and had some outstanding games, and we ended up, I think, losing him to Chelsea for a while, and I know he was miserable as sin when he went there. What do you think? Was there a way that we could have gotten both of them?
I think it's a bit of a myth in that season that he was deputising for Glenn. First of all, let me say that every footballer that played alongside Glenn Hoddle for Tottenham Hotspur at that time, especially in midfield, was by proxy playing quote unquote second fiddle. It was immensely unfair.
Fair point.
I haven't even mentioned Tony Galvin's vital role in that season either. It was a vital role. He's a brilliant player. Hazard and Hoddle played together quite a lot that season, actually.
Okay.
I think that unfortunate time for Mickey Hazard. If he'd have been 5 years later when Glenn was tripping off to France, he'd have been the king of White Hart Lane. He was a brilliant player. Slightly different. He was a slightly more compact, I would say, and sort of diminutive player in that sense, whereas Glenn was much more leggy and languid and stridey, I would say. I mean, you know, so yeah. So that was 1981-82, having sucked most of the oxygen out of the room with my diatribe as to how brilliant that season was. We can actually now end on a season that might have been even better. Luton, 16-17. Is this the greatest season?
As a slightly younger fan, this is probably my favourite season ever. It's Pochettino at his peak. Our record that season, we won 26 in the league. We drew 8. We lost 4. We scored 86 goals. The highest in the league. We conceded 26 goals, the lowest in the league, and we still finished fucking second. And so much went right for us. We had three players who scored 20 plus goals that year. Kane, Son, and the guy I love, Dele Alli. And Chelsea won the title. We had a tough time in Europe, but it was a great, great season. And the most amazing thing about that season was we went for the whole period of the season without losing at White Hart Lane. And that was just one of the most stunning experiences, because it became a pure fortress. And the sad part of that was that it was the last time we were going to be playing there. And there's so many things that happened over that year. And I think I enjoyed every single part of it so much wrong. And kind of why did we finish second is one of the things I think about a lot. But I'm going to go through the team that we had and the team that I loved for that season. And Lloris in goal, World Cup winner, Hugo Walker, before he left us, at right back, Toby and Jan at their pomp and peak, Danny Rose as well. And then the midfield. Now here I went for Wanyama and Dembele instead of the guy whose name I can't pronounce, Eric Dyer. And then Son, Dele, Eriksen and Kane, them four up front. And what was amazing that season, the way they would change roles and move around and switch the left, the middle and right, and the interplay between them was unbelievable. And we had some amazing results. And we were just bloody good. We bought in Sissoko that year, the legend. That is Moussa Sissoko. We sold a few too. We sold Alex Pritchard, Yedlin, Chadley, Mason, Carroll, Odua and Bentaleb actually went that year for 16 million to Schalke. And we bought in Moussa Sissoko, the legend Nkudu Wanyama, who's one of our best buys, similar to when we bought Højbjerg this year. I think Wanyama was an amazing signing for us. And before those injuries, I thought he was remarkable for us. And Janssen came in with a lot of hype. And I remember drooling over Janssen's YouTube compilations, thinking, that's it, we've got a really good backup for Kane. And it didn't work out for him as much as I did want it to. And there was a panic buy of Moussa Sissoko, which we all remember. And then the season, we just played so well, and we just weren't. Chelsea had a remarkable season that year. Yeah, I'm just trying to think what went wrong for us and why I loved it so much. Kane was unbelievable, but he had an injury in the middle. Son turned up, and he was really, really... Son and Ali were amazing together during that period. We had a horrific time in Europe. Pochettino was getting all the hype, but we got so much banter for finishing second. And then it went on to the next year and it carried on. But yeah, it was a season which I just loved. It's a season which I watched the highlights of yesterday, and I think I almost shed a tear at the beauty of the football that we played. And I think that was the year where we should have won it. It really, really was. We were by far and away the best team in the league. And I know Chelsea might have got more points than us, but we were unbelievable. And
Luton, when you were talking through the team there, you're starting off and I was looking at the back line. I was thinking, that's the best back line in the league that year. And then I look at the rest of the team, I think that's the best midfield and it's the best forward line as well. There's not a weak player there, is there? There's not a weak link.
Nope. Scored the most, conceded the least, and we still came second. And it's the most Spurs story ever. And it's a fitting finish to this segment of the pod that we were that good and we still didn't win a thing that year.
It makes me want to give up. Just go and watch cricket.
Honestly, it really does.
That's how bad it is.
I think this was the season, actually, that we had the best calendar year, didn't we? So we were the best side in the country for a calendar year.
Oh God, if you look at our results over those 2 years, we were by far the best team in the country. So if there was a two-year league table, we'd absolutely battered shit out of everybody. Yeah. And it was just remarkable. I mean,
I think the last league games there, I think we won 13 out of 14. Is that season? And the one game we lost was the West Ham. Do you remember everyone moans about losing against West Ham? And they're thinking, we've blown it. And then you say, yeah, but we won 13 games out of 14. We just won one game after another. It's only because Chelsea were doing the same thing that we just couldn't do anything about it. So
We had a few draws at the start of the season. But otherwise, it was just it's a wave of green when you look at the results. Lost 2-0 away to Liverpool in February, and then the West Ham 1-0 at the running track, and that was it. Otherwise, it was just all wins. And we had, I think we maybe benefited a bit that season by not having long cup runs, so we could really concentrate and throw that best 11 into every single league game. I can't remember how we did for injuries. Looks like Kane played 29 scored 29 in the league. I don't know how many, it's a big factor, isn't it, when you haven't got Champions League or Europa to concentrate on and you can just have one game a week.
I noticed back the season that I think Milo talked about, the Martin Jol season when he got us into Europe. It was embarrassing early on because we embarrassingly went out of both cups in the very first game. But then we qualified for Europe and it was really noticeable.
I think in Milo's season, we played 40 games because we played two cup games and the rest were league games. Right. 40 games is just like nothing. Because I think looking at Steph's season, we played like 69 or something. It's just such a vast difference that has an effect.
Well, you know, it was a thing under Pochettino here, wasn't it, that he timed the fitness for the run-ins. So once we started getting to late winter, or New Year, late winter, that's when we really hit our stride, and then that would be the best we'd play all season. And it was definitely the case here.
I think the big thing I remember about that year was also it was the fall off of Brexit, and I remember it was one thing that gave me joy that year, because I'm quite comfortable with the idea of us leaving now, but at the time, I was an arch Remainer and it happened, and I thought, look, this is just, they've won this, and Spurs made me happy because I was so disappointed that we'd voted to leave. I remember Spurs giving me lots of joy that year because we just kept winning and we kept playing well, and we had the odd blip. We beat Arsenal at home, and it was actually the biggest thing that season, really important point, was that win against Arsenal. It was our last North London derby at White Hart Lane, and it was the first time we finished above them in 20 years or 21 years. And that in itself was an amazing day. I remember Delhi got the first goal and Kane scores a penalty, doesn't he? And that penalty that Kane scored, when I watch it back and I see the way his foot went, I think he's hit it wrong, but he's absolutely driven it into the corner, and I'll never forget it. But that was an amazing... And then that header from Wanyama against United, and the flick... No, It was a flick from Kane, wasn't it, when we scored against United? A really good back heel. But those are the two things which I remember. And they got me through Brexit because I was so angry about that. And I remember that significantly for that year.
Yeah, the old the goons aren't quite so hot on St. Totteringham's Day anymore, are they? Now that's disappeared.
Yeah. I think we talk about pride. Mauricio Pochettino gave us back everything. He gave us back our pride. He gave us back our football team, and he gave us back our style. And in many ways, I think it's one of the biggest tragedies in football. And I say this with only a slight hint of bias that we didn't win the league that season. But the pride I felt, this man, he was, I mean, I say this and I may be overstating it, but he had a very Shankly-esque way about him to me. For those of you who remember how what Bill Shankly did for Liverpool, you know, Bob Paisley obviously followed Bill Shankly and won loads more trophies, but Bill Shankly redefined Liverpool Football Club. And I think Mauricio Pochettino redefined our football club. And there are two things I remember about that season. Sorry to jump in on this, Luton, but I have to say, first of all, the wave of emotion I felt at the final game of the season against Man United. I mean, I shed major tears, and I still... It still gives me a shudder to think about it. I mean, it was a very, very emotional time. I mean, it was a very emotional day, and I still miss the old ground. And I also have to say, everyone talks about Mauricio Pochettino not winning anything. Talk about bad luck, because I don't think there's a Tottenham Hotspur supporter alive who doesn't believe if we'd have played one more season at White Hart Lane, we would not have won the title. I'm prepared to say unequivocally we would have walked it, because that he had that ground mastered. He knew exactly how we were going to play on that pitch. And that pitch, if you ever stepped on that pitch, it was a very fast pitch, very tight. There's that slight camber in the middle, there's that slight rise in the middle. So when that ball's going from left to right, you know, it's moving fast. And you know that he, being the football scientist he is, he had every angle calculated. But what a beautiful side, beautiful.
And what a beautiful man Mauricio is. Let's just it's all round to look at, to watch his football. You know, he's just perfect. I mean, you can have a crush on Mauricio. It's absolutely fine. Lovely hair. And for those who can't see us, which you can't, not all of us have lovely hair or hair. But
can I just ask us a question before we move on to the next section? So we've got all of these six sides here. If they were playing each other in a tournament, which one's going to come out on top?
1991.
I think it's between my team and Steph's team, Luton's team and Steph's team.
I agree.
I think, unless
Gazza pulls out everything for Moby in the quarterfinals or something.
There's more magic in that Steph side with absolute geniuses. Did you have Hodolan Ardiles in your team?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And I have to say, my vote for winning that game, that one-off game between the 81-82 and the 17, I think it's going to be Poch's side that wins in the end, because I think he was maybe that shade more tactical a manager than the mighty Keith Birkinshaw, whose name I didn't mention, but who also remains one of my favourite.
And it's not comparable, but the fitness levels of...
Poch's side were unbelievable. Mm.
We
pressed all season.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, it's weird how that's such an amazing season, but it's sad for the White Hart Lane and the fact that we should have won that. We were by far and away such a good team.
But again, to end on an optimistic note, which I think has been a really, it's a fun wonder down the old memory lane, if you will, and one that we could probably continue for another 3 hours, which of course we won't. You know, thank you, Mauricio, for helping put us back to where we deserve to be.
If you're listening, Mauricio, I love you, man. I love you.
I'm right there as well. I'm right there. I think we all are. But Luton, I have to say, that side probably out of all the teams we've gone through resonates the most. I love my 81-82 side, but I'm a middle-aged man now. So the joys that we've had with Mauricio have resonated that much more because of the decades of pain and near misses I've lived through since that 81-82 side. So everything Mauricio and that lineup gave us has just meant so much more, probably, you know. So Wycombe Wanderers will have happened by the time you're listening to this podcast, so you're spared an analysis of that cup tie. Let's hope we're talking about the next round on another podcast. The next game we do have coming up that we can briefly address, it's a small team from Merseyside. We've had a couple of ding-dongs with them in the past. On Thursday...
Marine?
At 8 p.m.
Marine?
It's... Yeah. quite. Yeah. Well, they're actually becoming a little marooned in the tastes of defeat and not winning right now. And it's Liverpool. Is there a better time that we could be playing Liverpool?
No.
Wounded tiger.
Hidden dragon.
They're a lot poorer than they have been for a long time at the moment. And I think this is a good time to be playing them. Klopp's going to try and get a reaction, but he probably tried to get a reaction against United in the FA Cup and that didn't work. So they're misfiring in midfield. Their defence is clearly missing Van Dijk. And I think if we don't beat them in this game, I think we are going to be struggling for top four. I think this is a huge game.
I think it's...
And yeah, this is our opportunity to not cop things up like we often do.
So, awesome. Is this a must win?
I'm going to say yes, considering it's at home.
Yep. I agree. It's an absolute must win. I think it's an absolute
must win against a weakened side at the moment who are struggling to pick up any points. How deep are we going to defend all game in this one?
I'd say it's actually easier to get a reaction out of Klopp at the moment if you're an interviewer. Yeah. A little bit wobbly, it's a bit on tilt, I'd say. Yeah.
Mourinho is going to be digging at that wound, isn't he, this week?
And he'll do something wonderful in the media. And I can't wait for when he does his. He's going to have his people working right now, saying, "What's the most vitriolic and antagonistic thing I can say to wind Jurgen Klopp up? Because he's nearly broken. Let me break him."
I think
he's a world class wind up merchant. And I love it. That's one thing I do like about him. The way
he'd
plays
great on the forum. He'd be great on the football forum, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he'd be amazing.
I think aside from Jose's wind up and his off the pitch performance in that sense, I expect him tactically to win this game. Liverpool are tired. Liverpool are there for the taking in certain areas. I think that both wing-backs, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, sensational players. I think they've simply played too much football in too short an amount of time. And I think that Klopp is actually relatively blameless for what's happening. I think he's had a lot of injuries and I think he's had a hard time. So, I expect Jose to line us up in a way that we can win this game. I think Steven Bergwijn's going to be very important. I'm hoping that Sonny will return to form, but the key player is going to be Tanguy Ndombele, and I do not think Liverpool have an answer to him right now.
I think he'll line up 4-4-2 again. That's what he does against the big teams. So I think if Ndombele is playing, I think he's probably... It's going to be a funny one, isn't it? I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up playing number 10 off Kane.
Do you think, Milo, tomorrow's team selection will tell us a lot about what he's got planned for Thursday, the Wickham game?
I think we're going to see a lot of rotation tomorrow.
Yeah, so that would probably give us an idea. For example, if Moura starts and Stevie's on the bench, you're going to be fairly certain. I mean, I think we're going to win on Thursday. We should win on Thursday. Mm-hmm.
This is Jose's territory, and I back him. I back him to win this game and get us in a shape to win this game. I feel very confident. I'm very happy he's in charge for this game. I think it's a moment in time. It's very important for us, both in the season and as a club. Definitive moment. You know, this is a wounded tiger, and we have to take advantage. It's as simple as that.
I think a bonus that we've had is... we've actually had, considering how hectic our season is, we've actually had quite a few breaks recently with the original Fulham game being cancelled, Marine being the team they are. We haven't necessarily got to play any of our main players, and we've had 8 days off now. I know the Wickham game has pushed us closer to the Liverpool game, but as Milo says, we're probably going to rotate a bit tomorrow and that kind of thing. So although our season was hectic, we've had it recently over the last 2-3 weeks. We've had some really good gaps where people have been able to recover, because we ourselves look tired. And I probably agree with Steph saying that I think Liverpool, if it's you said that Liverpool look quite tired.
I'm very happy with the placement of the Wickham game. I think it's perfect. I think if we'd gone until next Thursday without playing, it would have been too long. And I don't think we're a side that... We don't do well when we sit too long either. So I think it's perfect. Back in game rhythm, I think it's fine.
I would have been happier with Wickham on Friday and put out a stronger side. Yeah. So we had something in between. But I think so. Liverpool had a tough game today. You know, Luton's right, they look tired, but they had a tough game tonight, and it's going to take a bit out of them.
And demoralising game too, because I know you don't love the stats, the XG was pretty level, 1.9 to United and 2.0 to Liverpool, and it was 3-2 in the end. Mm-hmm. So it could have gone either way. That's remarkable was how good Luke Shaw is at the moment. He's swapped guts with me, basically. He's gone really, really slim, and he's playing amazing. Luke Shaw was amazing today, but they looked weak on the flanks. I mean, they kept getting in, and I think Mourinho would have watched that today and thought, okay, it's there for the taking.
My last thought is we will win this game and we will have a happy pod. I think, chaps, we should all just say goodbye to our listeners.
It's good to be back, guys. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Good chatting.
Goodbye. Thanks, lads. And you've been listening to the Game is About Glory podcast. Tune in on Friday when we will have a special pod all about the Liverpool game, where you'll hear our instant reactions to what has just happened. And hopefully you'll find some empathy, joy, happiness as we celebrate a mighty win. Be sure to subscribe to us on your favourite podcast platform. Please, please share that with your friends. Let's grow this together. Let's make this community greater than it already is. Until Friday, see you later.